Monster Man, episode 263, Urchin Comma Land, and Ustilagore? Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we are doing the entire U chapter of Monster Manual 2, a 1983 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. But before we take a look at today's monsters, it's time to thank some new patrons. Yes, that's right, these are people who've gone to patreon.com/monsterman, and they've pledged as little as $1 a month. To help support the show. And if, like today's patrons, you pledge at the $2 or higher level, you'll also get access to my other podcast, Patron Deities, which is just about to wrap up a series about Native American mythology. Pledge at the $5 level, and you'll get the opportunity to choose a topic for your own special episode of Monster Man. So thank you very much, Ozzy Beck and Hazel King. It means a lot to me that you guys are enjoying the show enough to support it with your hard-earned money. Thanks again. Our first monster today is the Urchin, Land. Now, in order to fully understand the Land Urchin, we're going to have to go back to the Fiend Folio, in which we encounter the regular old urchin, what you or I might call a sea urchin. Now, we know what sea urchins are. Sea urchins are spiny aquatic creatures that you don't want to step on. But that is not at all what the urchin that appears in the Fiend Folio is like. It's a weird, color-coded, kind of Legend of Zelda thing that shoots its spines out. I don't know. It really seems like an enemy from a video game. Now, the Urchin, Land is doubly weird, and I think I went into this a little bit when we covered the urchin from the Fiend Folio, because here's the thing. Urchin means hedgehog. So the sea urchin is the sea hedgehog. You can kind of see where the name came from. Hedgehogs are spiny, sea urchins are spiny. Okay, that's it. But the idea is that the sea urchin is the sea version of a land animal, the land urchin or hedgehog. But here, the urchin, land is not like the urchin, land in real life, i.e. the hedgehog. Instead, it is a land version of the aquatic urchin. This may be a first. This book and Fiend Folio have both had a number of monsters that were essentially aquatic reskins of land creatures from earlier books, from Monster Manual, or indeed from reality, like the seahorse, or possibly the hippocampus. I always get those two mixed up. Or even, you know, kind of pointless aquatic versions of humanoid races, like the sea elf. And just the other week, we saw the damp troll. But this may be the first time that we've seen a land version of an aquatic monster. The other funny thing is that the urchin, land is kind of, it's not harmless, but it's not really hostile. It has defensive strategies, so, you know, if you get too close to it, it'll shoot some of its spines at you, which will inject you with a paralyzing venom, but then it'll just scurry away. It doesn't want any trouble. It can also protect itself by emitting a dark cloud that will cover its tracks, and much like a squid would, you know, emit a jet of ink. So the image of the urchin, land makes it look kind of weird and alien and grotesque. But actually, the description of it makes me think of it as being kind of cute. And so this is further complicated by the fact that the urchin, land secretes a valuable pearl in rare cases, but not zero cases. And so you can open up the urchin after you kill it and maybe find some pearls inside. So once again, we have a creature that isn't really a monster. It's just a piece of wildlife that doesn't really exist. It's not some kind of blasphemy against nature. It's not really hostile. It is dangerous, I guess, in the same way that some of these other kind of landscape hazard monsters can be dangerous. So if you're in an environment where there are urchins, land, and one of them shoots you with its paralyzing spines and then scurries away, you're just lying there when those troglodytes that were looking for you happen to find you, well, then that's bad news. But the urchin, land wasn't trying to kill you. That's just a threat response. You know, if it sees a predator, that's what it does. Non-existent wildlife has always kind of been an odd category in Dungeons & Dragons, and particularly when you're dealing with things that don't have some kind of literary or folkloric antecedent. So for example, like the Bonicon, you know, that's not a supernatural creature, but it's also not real. But at least it's grounded in, you know, a medieval bestiary tradition, and I don't think that this is. Although, the things that medieval bestiary writers affected to believe about hedgehogs and porcupines are also pretty funny. Anyway, it's fine. It's definitely a not in Kansas anymore monster. If you wanted to run a real high fantasy world, you could do worse than have a couple of land urchins scurrying around in the foreground, just to kind of remind people that we're in some weird dark crystal space where there aren't, like, foxes and bears and chickens. There's land urchins and bonicons and what have you. So in that sense, I think it's a useful thing to have around the landscape, and again, like, a wily ranger could lead someone, you know, next to an urchin's nest so that they would get paralyzed, or something like that, and that could be fun. Next up, we have the Ustalagor, and this is a weird one. The Ustalagor is a fungal creature that is a bit shaped like a brain. It emits psychic kind of waves, negative waves, I guess you could say, if you were, I don't know, Donald Sutherland. And this primitive form of psionic projection instills negative emotions in people who are subject to it. So fear, hatred, mistrust, and suspicion, things like that. It's a bit like the comic villain Psycho Pirate, who had that ability to kind of like instill his own emotions in other people. Or maybe I mean Rainbow Raider. I think they both had similar kind of emotional powers. Anyway, neither of them were all that great. But the Ustalagor also has a physical attack where it can, like, smack you with one of its caustic tendrils, but I don't think that's really the point. The interesting thing about them is that they emit this psionic field or whatever it is, but they are not themselves intelligent. They remind me a little bit of, like, the brain mole if you want to cast your mind way back to the early history of this series, except that the brain mole had that wonderful illustration where it was all furious, and I feel like the Ustalagor just kind of, this is just sort of what it does. It doesn't seem to have, like, an adaptive strategy that involves this, like, scaring things off is a defensive reaction, I suppose, so maybe it kind of evolved this to protect itself from animals or sentient beings that would be interested in eating it. I wonder if it is edible. Either way, you can definitely see that the Ustalagor would be cultivated or maybe even created by some kind of psionically powerful or psionically resistant villain who kind of put them in the caverns around their base to deter intruders, right? I mean, that's what they seem like. They almost seem like a ward that you would kind of almost intentionally grow them in order to weaken anyone who tries to come in by infecting them with hatred or fear or whatever, and then your other servants might be things that would be immune to it, you know, golems or what have you, that just don't have those kinds of psionic weaknesses. And with their kind of brain-like appearance, it seems like aesthetically they would be a good fit for something like a mind flayer. I wonder if you're meant to mistake them for intellect devourers, like if they're a gacha monster in that sense, because they do kind of very superficially resemble an intellect devourer in that they kind of look like a big brain with legs. We've seen that there are a number of what I call gacha monsters, which are things that are meant to, like, have the same kind of high-level description as another type of D&D monster, so your character wouldn't know what either an Ustalagor or an intellect devourer is, but when the DM gives you that description, some wiseacre in the party is like, ah, it's an intellect devourer, here's what we do. But I don't think that would actually benefit you against the Ustalagor. It also reminds me a little bit of the carbuncle in that it's intended to sow mistrust and dissension among the party. You know, for all that that's a very common villainous trope, for all that is very typical for bad guys to try and turn members of a party against each other, we've actually not seen very many D&D monsters where that is their thing. The doppelganger, kind of the most obvious example, but that's not really emphasized in the actual doppelganger entry, as I discussed at length in the doppelganger special. Anyway, Ustalagors are pretty cool. They're not a feature monster, but they could definitely be an interesting addition to a dungeon that was centered around, you know, that kind of uncertainty or duplicity, so any kind of shape changer or mind reader of a bad guy would sort of make sense for them to have some Ustalagors just kind of... Ustalagors? I don't know. I don't know how you pronounce it. But anyway, I quite like them, actually. I had never really heard of these guys, but I think that they are a fun addition to a dungeon. They're very kind of Star Trek-y, you know what I mean? In that they're a natural or, you know, magical, I guess, phenomenon that has an effect that fundamentally is about emotion and acting. That seems to me something that you run into a lot in Star Trek and in TV science fiction in general, because, of course, you know, acting costs the same no matter what and doesn't require any additional special effects. So yeah, I think, you know, again, they're not an everyday monster, but as a little change of pace, I think these could be a lot of fun. All right, that is about all the monsters that we have time for today. In our next episode, we're going to move on into the V chapter. Actually, before our next regular episode, we have a special episode that's going to be all about ghosts and ghost stories. But then after that, we're going to take a look at the Vagabond and the Vargui on Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons attribution license. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.